The night shift across Australia, Pat Panetta filling in for Luke Boner. And joining me now is the founder and director of Superior People, Graham Wynn, our employment expert on the program. Hi there, Graham.
Good morning, Pat. How are you today?
I'm good, mate. Filling in for Luke for a week. Oh, he's probably. I'm thinking Luke's probably on his super yacht or his mega yacht on Sydney Harbour right now.
Oh, he's trying out the new Ferrari probably.
Probably, yeah. No, well-earned break for Luke. Only a week, then he's back on Monday. Now, you know, speaking of sort of incentives and living a great life, it's a bit of an employee market in a way where, you know, businesses and bosses are trying to create incentives to attract new people and also to get their existing people to work longer and do more.
It is a really challenging time. I've run this business now for 12 or 13 years, and we certainly have never experienced it this difficult to find workers for employers at the moment. I've never said it's just every industry across the board is struggling to find people.
Is that what's the key underlying factors there, Graham? Is it because skilled migrants have left the country? I know we're trying to get them back in. Those who are here don't want to work. What's causing this labour shortage, do you think?
There is a combination, but the two main factors, well, the one main factor was when we shut our borders. There's no doubt that's had a huge impact, not just the skilled people, but the backpackers, the holiday makers who would fill the retail, hospitality roles or casual work. They haven't been here, but the skilled workers have certainly been a problem. And the problem we've got is that basically once we opened the borders, we assumed, that's okay, they'll all come, but they weren't sat waiting at airports. We were the last sort of country to open our national borders, international borders, and basically the people who wanted to work overseas have gone elsewhere. So we're starting back from scratch again to try and rebuild that market because those people are working in other countries now. So they weren't sat waiting for us to open the borders. They went elsewhere, and that's where we're in this position now.
So is it the fault of our governments that didn't sort of move quick enough and basically left holding the baby? And as you say, skilled migrants, people with skills have gone elsewhere and we've missed the boat on some level.
I think we should have been a bit more relaxed. If people had the skill we wanted and they're fully vaccinated, let them in. What damage could they have done if they were fully vaccinated? Let them in, because that's the issue. If we're saying in Australia we're over 90% vaccinated, if the people coming in are vaccinated as well, where is the potential damage? So I think we're a bit slow, and we seem to have this idea of one size fits all. We should have been a bit more flexible in allowing certain people to come in at certain times when it was safe for them to do so, rather than this just blanket, nobody comes in, then take the blanket off, you can all come now. I think we were wrong to do it that way.
So what are we looking at now? What sort of labour market do we have now in Australia? High wages or very competitive, where people are skipping around from job to job, looking for more money and working less? What's the consequence of all this, Graham? What are we looking at right now?
Well, consequence is that people are certainly looking for more money, but they're also looking for better working conditions. There's far more people looking for these hybrid type roles where part-time in the office, part-time working from home. And again, the government have been probably a major player in that. And I'll use Victoria as an example. They've only recently started to encourage the Victorian government workers, which are thousands of them, to actually start going back to the office. So the private sector, well, hang on, if they don't have to, why should we? So I think, again, the government taking these decisions, there's been huge consequences of that. So if the government say, well, our people don't need to come back to the offices, then the private sector says, well, why should we? And it's a real problem, but the private sector wants people back in the office. So we've got this real dilemma now. The employers want them back in the office. Job seekers don't want to go in the office. And somewhere down the track, these two are going to have to get in line with each other. At the moment, they're not.
Are we suffering from that thing that was big in the US and also here, the great resignation, where people during COVID had a bit of a rethink about life and thought, you know what, there's more to life than sort of working my guts out, and maybe they want to stay at home or not work as hard or design a life around their habits, not like it used to be. Are we sort of in this time of change, a cultural change with the way we see work here in Australia?
I don't think we experienced the great resignation as other countries did. And one of the reasons for that is Australia is enormous. It's the size of Europe. It's the size of the United States. but we've got so few people in comparison. So logistically, it's not as easy for people to move from one location to another location and keep changing jobs. You really are limited to the CBD, you know, Melbourne or Sydney or Brisbane or Perth. We don't have that luxury that the UK has or America has. And you can just go 5 minutes down the road and there's another head office or another head office. We don't have that logistical situation. So I don't think we've seen the Great Resignation of Australia as other countries have seen it. What we have seen is people's reluctance to move unless it's a much better offer on the table. They're not moving for the same or slightly less with the potential for advancement. They're saying, no, if I'm getting $80,000 now, if you want me, it's going to cost you $100,000. So that's where they're driving it. So that's why employers are struggling to find people, because we can't actually poach unless employers give better conditions, more money, etc. The number of people actually applying for jobs is far less than it's been for a number of years. So people aren't physically applying for jobs. We're having to go and find them and poach them from other employers.
I see. Right, right. Well, there you go. I'm terrible in job interviews. I'm happy about that. I don't think I've ever succeeded in a job interview my whole life, Graham.
That's why I run my own business.
I sweat a lot from memory. A lot of sweat going on.
I'm sweating now.
That's right. I've got to ask you, what are some of your weaknesses or those sort of hard questions? That's what makes you sweat. I won't ask you any of those sorts of questions.
Please don't. No. the list is too long.
Are employees, Graham, using those lifestyle factors to attract people? Little things like, you know, there's the gym, there's the ping pong table, there's the coffee machine, and, you know, all sorts of those little add-ons, which I reckon attract people. I mean, money's one thing, but when you can work in a place with all the bits and pieces, people enjoy that as well.
I think employers are trying to do that, but I think the one thing that's driving people at the moment more than anything else is money. That's the best. Nice to have cotton and nice coffee machines and ping pong tables, but they want money because cost of living is going up, fuel's going up. And so that's another reason why people are reluctant to leave current jobs if they've got to travel a bit further, because it's going to cost them more to get there.
Right.
So that's the real issue, is the cost of living. So people are saying, yeah, I like all your little fancy pretty things, but I want money.
Yes, but isn't the economy, Graham, overheating? Isn't the Reserve Bank trying to slow everything down? If all the wages start to go up, that says to me inflation. So we've got two forces working against each other. If everybody starts getting more money, isn't that what the Reserve Bank is trying? This is very basic economics from me, but isn't that what they're trying to slow down?
And your basic economics is 100% spot on. If suddenly everybody started earning far more money, they'll be spending more money, inflation would shoot up, and they don't want that to happen. So it's a real catch-22 that people deserve decent money for a decent job, but if we push it too far, inflation is going to go out of control. So we really have that dilemma at the moment.
Yeah, we sure do. Now, tell me about this business in the aged care sector offering lottery tickets to those who work longer or work harder. Now, it's not in lieu of pay, but it's an incentive for them to do more.
Basically, yes. So they're struggling to get people to do extra shifts. And so what they're trying to say is, okay, if you do extra shifts, you can actually get a lottery ticket for it. We'll buy you a lottery ticket. But they're also trying to use it as a way of, if somebody says, okay, I want an extra 5%, they'll say, well, increase. Well, okay, we'll give you 3%, but we'll give you a couple of lottery tickets as well, where you could win $100,000. Yep. So they're trying it in different ways, because if you say, well, I'm sacrificing a couple of grand a year, but I could win 100, hey, is it worth a gamble or not? So that's what they're trying to do as a way cutting back their own costs and to not have to keep paying higher wages by offering these little incentives. And they're looking also not just individuals, like can we get some pools of people together, join a syndicate so we can all go into this one. Right. That will pay for the tickets, but if we win, it's your money. Okay. So it's an interesting way of doing things.
It's costing the employer.
Look, I think it's a reasonably good idea to try as an incentive. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's a selling point to make people want to work for you.
Yeah.
But I think while you're there, it's costing you nothing as an employee. Yeah. So, hey.
They're not giving you the lottery tickets and saying, we're not going to pay you. We're going to pay you. You know, it is an add-on for those who want to sort of participate. Our audience, Graham, are very switched on with this sort of stuff. How do you feel about those sorts of incentives in your workplace? 133353. I think Graham and I are saying, I think I agree with you that it's worth trying. It's an incentive for those who work a bit more. They are getting paid for it, but there's also the opportunity. And as you say, there is the opportunity to win that money, but It's like a promotion in radio or any sort of promotion, I guess, Graham, where there's just an added element of getting involved. Maybe I'll win as well. So it just adds an extra dimension to it all. Yeah.
If you're in a syndicate with 10 or 12 people, you're going to be talking every week. What are the numbers? Did we win? So actually can do quite a bit of team building as well by doing that sort of process. It's an interesting idea. I say nothing against it. The good thing is they're not actually not paying you what you've earned. This is an add-on because they're just struggling to get people to do those extra shifts, which comes back to more people wanting that work-life balance now and not wanting to do the extra shifts. Mm. And that also comes under other wonderful
a penny's dropped there as well. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of the boss. So people who want more work-life balance, maybe they don't want to do the extra work. They, 5 o'clock comes and they go home. This lottery ticket sort of program might just get someone to stay a couple more hours, get paid for it, but also get the ticket. So it's just a way of sort of offsetting that whole work-life balance. I want to get home and maybe just, go for a run around the block.
Correct. It's a bit of a thank you. So rather than just getting what you're entitled to financially, here's a bit of a thank you as well. And that's a nice touch.
133353, the sorts of incentives that you'd go for and maybe being offered at your workplace. I know you said there, Graham, and we all agree that money is the bottom line. More money always does the trick as far as, going for a new job. What other sort of hot buttons, though, do you think really gets people interested? If I'm looking at LinkedIn or a job ad, okay, so the money's good, but what else do I want to see when I look at a prospect for a new job?
I think people, what they're looking for, assuming money's okay, they're looking for, okay, is the company growing? Is there opportunities for me? If I want to move now, I want it to be for a long time, not a short time. So where is the growth of the company coming through? So using LinkedIn as an example, it's important for employers to have their own business page, actually selling their business to people as a great place to work. And when we actually talk to job seekers, we have to do that. We have to sell an employer to them as to why you should leave your current employer and go and work for this one. Well, employers can do that themselves by really keeping on top of these LinkedIn pages of their own and promote themselves. So because people will look at that business. When we talk to candidates, we tell them the name of the employer, they will go and research and Google them. Now, when I first started working, and possibly yourself as well, we had to go to the library and get microfiche happening to try and do research on companies, which took a long, long time to do. But that's how we do it these days. You jump online and you can find out everything you want.
Yes.
So it's a 30-second quick look. So companies need to make sure that social media pages are up to date, LinkedIn pages are up to date. If people Google your business and your social media pages are 3 years out of date, it's a red flag.
Mm. I don't necessarily dislike the idea of companies and bosses having to work harder to attract staff and make sure that they're up to date, as long as they're not, the other way where they say, take it or leave it, this is the job and, if you don't like it, there's the door. So there's a bit of a power shift there, which is not necessarily a bad thing, Graham.
It's not a bad thing as long as it doesn't go too far, obviously.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, I've had employees in the past where a candidate sort of was working there and said to me, I don't like it because of this reason. So I've spoken to the owner of the business and their attitude has been, well, take it or leave it. There's dozens of other people out there can do the job.
Yeah.
Well, that isn't the case at the moment. No. So employers have got to be a little bit more careful now about how they react to any internal sort of complaints or criticism because they can't just get rid of somebody and the following day somebody new comes in. It's not that simple. Now, that shift will change again further down the track, I'm sure. But at the moment, it's the employees who are driving things.
Yeah.
But once that changes, when the overseas workers come back and et cetera, that'll flip back the other way again.
Yeah.
So the employers will have a greater choice. So the employees won't be able to push the envelope quite as much.
Right, okay.
So it does change.
You've got to feel your leverage, don't you? It's all about negotiation.
Absolutely.
How much leverage do I have? You remind me, Graham, as we chat, that I just saw somebody the other day who was doing job interviews, and she said to me there was, a couple of young people who went into the job interview and started off by saying, so what do I get? What are the benefits? So this is a reflection of what you're saying. These people obviously applying for many jobs and like, let's cut to the chase. let's do the small talk. Just tell me what the benefits are, because I can weigh them up.
Yeah, and look, that's certainly a younger generation mindset when they go to interviews, what's in it for me? Because they do work on this instant gratification these days, which again, I didn't when I was first started working. No. You were just grateful for having a job.
That's right.
Now it's just this instant gratification. What's in it for me? And I talk to candidates looking for work who've left a job after 6 months because I didn't see any further opportunities. There was no promotion in the first 6 months. They want it now. It's not going to happen now, but that's their mindset. Well, they're looking for this instant gratification. So their question always is, what's in it for me?
Well, you've got to give to get, don't you, Graeme? You can't just go in there and put your hand out. You know,
generally speaking.
Yeah, you've got to sort of provide a service or provide value or give something, and then the good stuff comes. You can't. It doesn't really work the other way around, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it shouldn't either. You've got to put in, then you get out. Yeah. And those that work the hardest and put in the most generally get the most back from it.
So have we got a backlog of about 200,000 skilled migrants who are being processed to come into the country? Did I hear you and Luke talking about that, or at least Luke mentioned that? So, and then the government will open up the doors for maybe another 200,000. So there will be relief from overseas skilled migrants on the way?
Part of the problem is that, yes, they're increasing and pushing through many more, but they're doing it by industry. So looking at the aged care sector, the teaching sector first to get those people in, because those industries are struggling, but many other industries are struggling as well. And I have a problem when governments pick and choose which ones. You can't do that. You've really got to say, if you've got the skills we need, and there are hundreds of jobs on our skilled migration list that people can do, if you've got the skills, let's just get through them all and not pick and choose which ones,
because
other industries are struggling.
Yeah.
Just open the door, make it quick, and if they've got to employ more people, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
If my taxes go to paying for more people to get these people in the country, which will help our economy in general, because they'll spend money when they're here, do it.
Yes, yes. And let the boss or the employer look at the person that comes through and see if they're qualified for the particular job. The government doesn't have to select different categories or industries that need people, if you know what I mean. Yeah, just let the market decide.
Well, even employers are looking overseas, and we're trying to look overseas, direct ourselves to find people.
Yeah.
And then the employer is a host sponsor, and they can start the paperwork process to try and get that person in. But paperwork, there's even a backlog with that paperwork to try and get those people in the country. If it takes too long, they go somewhere else. We've got to find a way to quicken up this whole visa process, because it's not just the ones applying direct to the government. It's employers who found somebody overseas.
Okay, and they're stuck in red tape. They can't get the job done. Oh, well, that's frustrating.
Exactly.
We've got to cut that down. Is that the federal government or the state government that we need to talk to about that?
That's federal.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's a problem, because if it's got to be streamlined, obviously, if employees are trying to host somebody and do all the forms and things, it's sitting in an in tray for 6 months. Yeah, as you say, you're going to miss the opportunity. Now, thank you, Graeme. That's been a great chat. Should I put my photo on my resume? you know how you send your resume? Can you put your photo only if you're good looking? Should I put my photo on there?
I wouldn't put mine on. But if you do put a photo on, just head and shoulders. That's it. Nothing more than that.
Yeah.
I've had photos of females in bikinis.
Yeah.
I've had photos
of a glass of wine by the barbecue.
lay on a beach or with a big wind machine, the hair blowing to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, it's not necessary. Head and shoulders.
That's right. Go get a professional shoot, really.
Correct,
yeah. Go get a photographer. It cost you $100. Somebody point a camera at you and get a few different shots.
It's that easy. It's that easy to do. But, head and shoulders shots only, nothing more than that. And most recruiters and employers will check out your social media pages anyway, so we can get a vision of you anyway. So, but if you want to put it on, head and shoulders only, nothing more than that.
Jeez, I better go to my Facebook page now, Graeme, and get rid of all those photos of me sitting by the pool in Bali and all that stuff. All right, mate.
Good on you. No problem at all.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Luke's back next week. Always a pleasure to have you on the night shift. Graeme Wynn, the founder and director of Superior People. Thank you.
Much appreciated. Enjoy your week.